Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. Once again, our special guest is Dr. John Using. Dr. Using is a leading authority in the Inland Empire economy, an area he has been studying since he wrote his doctoral thesis on the region in the 1960s. His influence on the business and political landscape has been so extensive that the LA Times named him one of the 100 most powerful people in Southern California in 2006. He is the writer of the Quarterly Economic Report, an economic newsletter now in its 20th year. His company, Economics and Politics, Inc., provides consulting services for municipalities, counties, with economic strategies, statistical data packages, recommendations for public policy, and briefing presentations to businesses and political leaders about the nature, growth, and economic trends of Southern California. Dr. Using's website includes copies of his newsletter, PowerPoint presentations of various speeches, and photographic glimpses of exotic travel and adventures. Dr. Using, we welcome you back.
Thank you.
We had just sort of touched on the kind of the nature of this generation that is sort of staying at home, and there's certainly the political push at this point to have immigration reform. So in the Inland Empire, we certainly have our share of migration, immigration. So do you feel that an immigration change probably will occur, say, in the next 12 months? And if it does, what effect do you think it'll have on impact on housing?
Well, first of all, I don't expect anything to get through the Congress. I don't think the Congress is capable of that,
okay.
To be perfectly honest. But long term, I don't think there's any choice that we will, in fact, see immigration reform in some form occurred. We absolutely need it at several different levels. This program is about real estate, and if you look at the western edge of the Inland Empire, what you see going on there is a very large influx now of very well-educated professionals and entrepreneurs who are Asian. And it's one of the new trends that's affecting the Inland Empire as that activity migrates out of L.A. and Orange County, and is very much affecting particularly some of the higher-end towns in like Chino Hills and Eastvale and Rancho Cucamonga in the West End. So I think that effect is already there. I think it will grow. I think in the Hispanic community, there is such, as I've indicated in your previous show, there is such a heavy desire, typically, to have property with a home on it, that will also be something that we will see coming out of the into the market because of the value system in that community.
It's very normal for California to have strong immigration. When we have a Great Recession, that gets retarded quite a bit. And so there are some counties that were losers, some counties were still positive. Where does the Inland Empire fit into that?
In the last 5 years, no, 6 years, if you take the 6 years combined, ending in 2013, over that six-year period of time, 2008 to 2013, we lost a net of about 25,000 domestic and foreign migrants. So if you looked at people migrating in and migrating out, we lost people during that period of time. Not a lot. I mean, 25,000 out of a region with 4.33 million people is a drop in the bucket, but it's not what we're used to. And so they probably didn't leave here and go back to L.A. and Orange County or San Diego. They probably left for places like North Dakota, Texas, Arizona to go to work.
Okay.
Because of the difficulties in our economy. That'll turn around as the housing market begins to repair itself.
When you say the 25,000 downside is not, it's not significant in the sense of numbers, but in a way, it to me, it is because you also are absent anything that was positive. So you have 6 years of non-positive, which you are used to.
Absolutely. I mean, if you typically the Inland Empire is seeing a domestic migration, that is from the coastal counties inland, of about 40 or 50,000 people a year. It shot up as high as 90,000 in 04 and 05, dropped off, I think, to 70,000 in 06. But it was that was huge, and it is what we are used to and largely driven, frankly, by differential housing prices. I had just a quick story. I recently had surgery, and afterwards I was talking to the nurse while I was laying there idling. And I asked her, I said, where do you live? And she said, I live in Eastvale. I said, why? She said, my husband and I are from Orange County. And I got my nurse's ticket. He works as an executive in a manufacturing firm in Orange County. So we decided, okay, it's time to quit running and go upscale in housing. And I looked around Orange County and ended up in Eastvale and Riverside County because they could get a brand new house here with substantial square footage versus a decaying tract home in Orange County. And that's how it works. People don't come necessarily because they want to. They come because the pricing system says, if you want a home, you don't have a choice.
You know, I really have always been fascinated with the psychological side of charts. So like what you were talking about when you say that we're in that stage between optimism and excitement, people react differently that own businesses, or they react differently to taking on risk when they're in that mode as opposed to a down mode.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. And so what's interesting is, you know, we're in that mode of where it seems like we're about to take off and have a mood shift, and we have volume of sales down this year in real estate.
Yeah, again, if you look at the existing home market, a lot of that is a lack of supply. It just people haven't been willing to sell at these prices, and there's another group of people who haven't been willing to buy at these prices, and so you've had a bit of problem there. The FICO scores are still running in the middle sevens. It's gone from 750 to 724, I believe. The level of FICO score, I went back and checked what it was during the boom, and for some of the types of mortgages, it was down in the middle sixes. So you have a lot of people who could have perhaps bought it in a normal time, can't buy right now because the credit ratings have to be so much higher. So you have a lot of that's going on in the market. One of the reasons we have a lack of supply, quite frankly, is because there was so much purchase of housing for rental, where houses would go into foreclosure, they'd go back to the financial institution, but they never went back to the financial institution. They're immediately peddled to Wall Street funds to become part of a portfolio of rentals. And that really soaked up an enormous amount of housing. It really barred regular people from being able to take advantage of the prices when they were pretty low.
You know, if you add up all the homes they bought, it was significant, but it wasn't as many as foreign buyers. But what was significant is that they made an offer on everything that moved.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when you talk to real estate agents that were trying to find a house for a couple that wanted to buy one,
yeah,
they were really frustrated. And you're right, because a lot of it has been foreign buyers. You had both Wall Street injection buying it up in bulk, and then you had foreign buyers buying for their portfolio. And it's created some rather serious problems now in some of our communities, where single-family neighborhoods have seen a lot of rental homes converted to rental. And that is not the best urban environment, because those neighborhoods were never set up to be essentially absentee-owned multi-tenant housing by having a lot of single-family homes all go rental at the same time. It's a difficulty. The high desert is fighting it right now, and it's really scaring people up there.
Now, when you say what is scaring them, that the properties are taken care of in a different manner because it's a rental?
Well, there are two or three things you see. One is that, exactly. If it's a rental, the odds of it being cared for, particularly an absentee-owned rental, whether it's offshore or Wall Street, the odds of it being taken care of as well as an owner-occupied home where if I put my elbow through the wall, my wife hits me with a bat. If I'm a renter, I call up the landlord and say, hey, there's a hole in the wall. I mean, that's a piece of the problem. A second piece of the problem is when you look at the pressure on public services. I just did a lot of research on the high desert. The number of people per unit, the average number of people per unit, is far higher in rentals than it is in owner-occupied. So you've got a packing going on. You get more calls for police service, substantially higher. The lowest number I've seen is just under 20% higher probability of a call for police service than a call to an owner-occupied home.
Hmm.
Fire service, the highest, by the way, is 50% higher. That's not 50% of calls. It's a 50% higher likelihood of calls
right. In
rentals. Same thing with fire service. Same thing with code enforcement. And then when you get it really out of hand, and two towns historically I've seen this happen in, one was San Bernardino and the other was Moreno Valley, it began to affect the school system because you had lower income renters moving from home to home to home to continue to try and get the best deal, and their kids kept changing classrooms. And it really disrupted the ability in the elementary schools to teach. So these are issues that were never thought about when the Obama administration and the Fed said, oh, let's get all this stuff rented.
Yeah, that's, and you know what's interesting about that supply of homes, those, I'm not an expert at this, but my understanding is when you form a REIT and it's made up of 100,000 homes, those homes are not coming back to be sold to mom and pop. They're like a scattered apartment.
That's exactly what they are. At one point, to show you how bad it can get, and this is the worst case, I put an entire block of the city of San Bernardino into escrow back during the housing downturn of the early 90s. On that block, there were four homes I left alone. They were owner-occupied. The other 26 were all rentals. Therein lies, and they weren't the same owner. They were multiple owners scattered all over the Western United States. Well, that's essentially a multi-tenant operation with no ownership you can go talk to.
Well, you know, I have rentals, and, you know, most of the people I know have rentals. And so, you know, it's sort of a sore subject in the sense that they're entrepreneurs that are trying to do, you know, things not only for themselves, but, you know, when we take on those homes, like you said, when we buy those homes, generally they're been trashed because they've been vacant or something, and then
yeah. We
bring them up to speed. So investors do bring something to the party as well.
They do, but we haven't had enough experience with the Wall Street move to know how that's going to play out. But when you start talking about people who live in Washington State or people who live in Hong Kong or people who live in Thailand or live in Seoul, you've got a problem on your hands.
Well, you certainly have a potential. It'll be local management. I'm sure they're not trying to manage those themselves, I hope.
Well, one of the things that they're running into in the high desert is if they get a house that's out of control, they can't even find the owner. It's a real difficulty up there that they're really struggling with in Apple Valley and in Hesperia, in Victorville, and in Adelanto.
You know, one of the things that, again, kind of bouncing this around with you, I think a lot of people would be willing to sell at the price they can get, but I think they're afraid that they won't be able to requalify for a loan.
Absolutely. That's, I think, as much of a problem as anything else. Where I see the market at this point is we have at least one more year of healing. I think the market in 2015, you're going to start to see sunlight finally shining. And the number that I watch the most carefully is the share of the market that is still underwater. In the fourth quarter of 2009, 56% of all homes in the Inland Empire that had mortgages were worth less than what they owed on the mortgage. people were frozen in place. Well, today it's 19%.
Right.
So it's come down dramatically, but it's still one out of five. If prices continue moving, and I don't think they'll be as aggressive as they were last year, what it's going to do is start to make the current homeowners feel a little more confident, which is, I think, an important piece of this puzzle.
Yeah, if you were, you know, at the start of 2013, by the end of 2013, if you had any thoughts of not making your payment, you probably hung in there just because it looked like, wow, we're actually going to break above water here. And
well, when you look at the first stage of the mortgage, when a family's getting in trouble, the first stage in the process, the notices of default, they right now, in last 3 or 4 or 5 months in a row, have been at about 20 to 30% of where they were in January 2007 when this problem was first getting started. So the number of foreclosures has dropped dramatically and is really, I think the last time I looked at it, it's at an 8-year low. So that problem is working its way out of the system. And so what you need now is, as you've correctly identified, you need a restoration of confidence. Confidence in people who haven't been in the market, that have been afraid. People that have been living in homes, haven't made the decision to buy up, which often is a major piece of the market, particularly for newer homes. So that's kind of where we sit right now. And it's, I think at this point, it's more psychology, as you correctly identified, than it is the actual mathematics of what's going on in the marketplace.
Normally, when you have a downturn like what we had, you have years after that, so the 90s, so somewhere, let's say 95, 96, first-time buyers, 50% of the market. We're at about 25 to 27% right now. So that's a big chunk of buyers that aren't participating,
yeah.
Not because they can't afford it, because the interest rate makes that possible. It's some unwillingness or incapacity to qualify. One of the things people have mentioned to me is college debt.
That is an interesting factor that has moved in that I've seen a lot written about of late, yes.
I don't know that I buy it, but I guess I'd have to take a look and see if I could even think.
Well, I have a grandson who's a sophomore in college, and because my daughter is not in the position to not have him borrowing money, I'm helping pay a considerable portion of his tuition to make sure he doesn't graduate. He's at a state school in Virginia, and if he had to borrow it all, he'd be graduating with $80,000 in debt.
Okay, but he's got earning capacity that's supposed to be twice the median. So.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Assuming that he doesn't major in, you know, something other than...
librarian?
Yeah, or music, or, you know, religion, or philosophy, or whatever.
Well, you know, that brings up another point, is that when you do get an education or you want to go get a trade, that game has changed. It definitely has changed to you need to probably become an expert at something that 10, 20 years ago it wasn't even necessary.
Yeah, and see, in our area, my instinct is our biggest single problem, when you've got an area where over 46% of your adults stop their educations at high school or less, and with the job market going in the direction of you need advanced degrees, you need work in hard sciences, or you need technical skills. We're not training that technical skill piece anymore. We gave it up about 20 years ago. It's one of the dumbest things in society we did. And we do not have a system of adult short course workforce training. Doesn't exist. And I mean, the community colleges don't do it. They basically do first 2 years of four-year education. They do some certificate programs and stuff. But if you're looking at the sort of things that needs to go on in manufacturing or in logistics or in construction, there's no real avenue for training right now, and it's a gigantic issue for California.
Okay. California, if I pull up, okay, business-friendly states, we're not on the list until 49th.
We're actually in CEO Magazine, we were 50th last year.
Okay.
And if you looked at the rating on our regulatory policies from the Entrepreneurial Magazine for small businesses, we got an F. So how are we doing? Don't get me started. You haven't got enough time. It's a disaster. And it really gets down to the instability of our regulatory process. If you give businesses rules, they'll figure out it'll make profit within those rules. But if those rules are going to change constantly, then they don't know what the environment is they're supposed to be investing in. And they're going to pull back. Then if you put those rules out there and you have a bunch of people who are supposed to approve whether you've obeyed them or not, who at their own pace decide when they're going to get around to it, so you delay, 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 now you've compounded the problem, and then you toss in the possibility of anybody that wants to filing a lawsuit under something like CEQA, which could tie things up for years. What you've basically said to companies is, I'm going to go locate someplace else. I'm not going to go there. Or if they are here, they'll put their growth someplace else. In a few cases, they'll leave. But the point that's missing in all this is who gets hurt. And the answer is not the companies. They can go someplace else. Who gets hurt are the workers, because you've just shut off the jobs they need to be able to climb out of poverty. And it drives me nuts to think about that fact, that it's the case with this state. It largely, I think, emanates from the fact that a good deal of our economic policies come to us out of the Central Coast from Monterey north to Santa Cruz, the Bay Area going over out the I-80 to Sacramento. And that is an area that is highly educated. It's an area that's upper middle class, and they think that's normal. And unfortunately, they've had the ear of the leaders in Sacramento for decades, and our policies completely ignore places like the Inland Empire and the Central Valley. And what that has created is increasing levels of poverty, be sort of a benign neglect that's gone on from the folks who think they know better and don't.
Do you see serious out-migration of businesses? I know the Toyota, you know, that was a big
one. Well, the Toyota one is a real wake-up call. Actually, I wish they'd told the truth instead of saying, oh, it had nothing to do with California's regulation. I mean, you talk to anybody that leaves California, and they will tell you privately, I just wanted to get out of there. But I don't see the migration out as the bigger problem. The bigger problem is I have to be in this market often because there are certain reasons to be in California because of the size of the markets and all the rest.
Right.
But I'll put my growth someplace else. I won't put my growth here. I'll put the growth in Nevada or Arizona or Oregon or Utah or where, Texas. But the bigger problem is there are no companies that really look to California as the place they really want to go. On the contrary, it's the place they really want to avoid. And people can argue, well, the things they worry about aren't true. The perception becomes the reality if no company will come.
Right.
I remember when Boeing was looking for the second place to be building, I think it was the Dreamliner. And there were some people at one of the economic agencies here is trying to put together a package to talk to them about California and called me for some data. And I just laughed and said, I'm not going to waste my time or yours. There is no chance on earth that they would consider coming here, given, as I say, the instability of our regulatory processes.
Well, we've about run out of time, but I always find it fascinating to talk with you. I learn a lot from you. I really appreciate it. Your website, very important to go to, www.johnhusing.com. Fantastic newsletter and some cool pictures of some trips. Dr. Husing, thanks so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
It's been my great pleasure.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.